ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Once upon a time, journalists were trusted to hold those in power to account.
Deep Throat urged Bob Woodward and Carl Bernstein to follow the money.
But now trust in mainstream media is disappearing, paving the way for conspiracy.
Pizzagate is real.
The satanic temple of Jeffrey Epstein.
I'm Matt Bevan, and on my show, if you're listening, we dive deep into the stories and dispel the rumours. New episodes on ABC Listen every Tuesday and Thursday.
Believe work on a high-speed rail network could start in just 2 years' time? No? Well, that's not surprising because we've been talking about fast train travel for decades, but it's never happened because basically it costs too much. Today, Joe Langley, an urban planner who's a member of the advocacy body, the Australian High Speed Rail Association, on why it really could happen this time. I'm Sam Hawley on Gadigal Land in Sydney. This is ABC News Daily. Joe, why don't we start with a quick skip back through history, first of all, because we've been talking about a fast train for a really long time.
Okay.
It was back in 1984 that a proposal was put forward by CSIRO chairman Dr. Paul Wilde. What was his vision back then?
Well, his vision is the same as mine, which is to get from Sydney to Canberra in less than 4 hours.
It all started when I took a journey from Canberra to Sydney on the XPT. And that was a journey that was meant to take 4.25 hours. It took 4.75, and it had me so concerned.
That's the same amount of time that it takes today. So we're really sitting on the same technology that we were using 50 years ago to get between our major cities. And, you know, we need to keep pace with the rest of the world.
And of course, his idea was shelved in the early 90s because it did need government tax breaks, and, well, that never eventuated. Mm-hmm. John Howard, he also, of course, toyed with the idea first in the early 90s for a speed rail that would be between Sydney and Canberra. Again, ditched because massive government subsidies would have been needed.
The speed rail project to link Sydney and Canberra by high-speed rail is dead.
You can't justify spending $1 to $2 billion to subsidise a rail track between Sydney and Canberra.
In the early 2000s, Howard then returned to it again. He was looking at an East Coast network. But again, it's the cost, right? That was estimated to be $59 billion worth.
That's right. And that was followed with the Phase 2 study that I was involved in 2012, 2013, when I was part of the team that put together the report that was produced under Transport Minister Albanese for the high-speed rail.
There's been study after study, but the government reckons this is the most comprehensive yet.
I'm firmly on the record as a supporter of high-speed rail. But starting from scratch to build our own system does pose a number of complex challenges.
While commuters feel a need for speed, they fear it's going nowhere fast.
Hopefully I'm still around. And you too.
The Phase 2 study looked at a cost of around $114 billion for that project, but that was the entire network.
As you mentioned, $114 billion was a little bit too far a stretch. Other studies, of course, but, you know, as we said, it's somewhat frustrating, I think, because it just keeps coming up and then being shut down again.
Yeah, and I go back to the vision issue here, which is, and this is, I think, Professor Wilde's issue as well, is having a long-term vision for the future of the country that's missing in some of the minds of our leaders here. I mean, we are imposed with a 3-year election cycle, which puts a lot of pressure on politicians to make those sorts of long-term decisions.
All right. Well, Joe, let's turn then to today. Because all these years later, we've spent all this money, millions of dollars on proposals, on studies, and we have absolutely nothing to show for it. But All of a sudden, Anthony Albanese is very excited again, isn't he?
He is.
Plans to build Australia's first high-speed rail line have entered a new phase. The federal government will spend more than $200 million on a detailed design of the first section of the line between Sydney and Newcastle.
We're the only inhabited continent on Earth that doesn't have high-speed rail, and certainly Newcastle to Sydney to Canberra to Melbourne makes absolute sense.
This is a high-speed rail link initially between Newcastle and Sydney Central from 2039. Just tell me a bit more about that.
Well, it actually, that one leg goes to Sydney. The full complement would go to the Western Sydney Airport. Mm-hmm. The current plan by the High Speed Rail Authority is to start at Broadmeadow and Newcastle with a stop at Lake Macquarie and then to Gosford. And that would be the first leg. The second leg would go from Gosford into Central Station, and a lot of that would be underground, which is the major contributor to the cost of the project because it's underground for 60% roughly of the first leg, and that would be open by, as you say, around 2039.
Okay, and what is the cost then? It's huge,
The cost is $90 billion. That's what it's put at in today's dollars.
But, of course, there's always a risk of that increasing over time. I guess that's what everyone's always concerned about, isn't it, that the $90 billion turns out to be a lot more.
And I think you've got to give a lot of credit to the approach that the High Speed Rail Authority has taken in this exercise, is that they're saying, you know, give us more time and more money to do the detailed design. So what the authority proposes to do over the next 2 years is take the business case and drill down into it to make sure that the investigations that they've looked at to date, and to undertake more investigations for that matter, is going to come up with a robust cost estimate. That doesn't mean that there won't be cost busts in the future. There could still be those because so much of what happens in these big transport projects is hidden. You know, there's underground conditions that you can't anticipate. We've seen that in infrastructure projects going on in Melbourne and Sydney and Brisbane today. So this is a cautious approach to spend 2 years to do the detailed design. And then the next step is to create a shovel-ready project for the government to have another look at.
Yeah, okay. But the Transport Minister, Catherine King, she does think it's feasible that it would be shovel-ready, as you say, so construction would begin within 2 years.
What we're doing now is going into a two-year development phase, which is basically engineers will be going metre by metre along this rail track and designing it, designing all the tunnels, designing the stations, getting it ready for a final investment decision in 2028 for the Commonwealth to decide.
Do you think that's a feasible timeline?
From what I know and from what I've read, I think it is. 2 years will give them adequate time, I believe, to do the investigations they need to true up their case.
Okay, so as we said, this first leg at least would be just in New South Wales. So I guess the question arises in taxpayers' minds is who is going to pay for that. Now, the New South Wales Premier, Chris Minns, he's not committing to putting any money into it at this point.
I mean, it's going to take a huge effort and a lot of money, but, I'd love to see investment in New South Wales. That kind of infrastructure investment's fantastic for our state.
Who's paying and how much is still to be worked out, is it?
That's right. It's very disappointing that that's the New South Wales government's reaction to this because the New South Wales government and the people of New South Wales have been the major beneficiaries of cost sharing between the federal government and the state government on big infrastructure projects. The Sydney Metro, for example, the Second Sydney Airport. And those are the types of projects that have lifted the economic capacity of the state of New South Wales.
So do you think the federal government should be prioritising this Sydney leg first then?
Well, there is some opposition to the cost of this project. The previous study showed that the Sydney to Canberra leg would be more expensive overall because it's about twice the distance, but it would be less cost per kilometre and probably could be done quicker. So we've sort of boxed ourselves in a little bit, I think, in coming up with the first leg rather than laying out what the full program would be.
Right.
But that was not the mandate that was given to the authority. They were given a mandate to look at, in the first instance, Sydney to Newcastle.
Yeah, because some people would think, oh, why not, you know, Sydney to Melbourne? That's a hugely busy aviation route. I guess in the traveller's mind, that might make more sense.
Well, I think in the final analysis, Sydney and Melbourne have to be connected with high-speed rail if you're going to build it, because that's where the full benefits of the network are going to be realized, in addition to the Brisbane leg. The more we build and connect, the higher the return on investment will become over time.
Mm.
So Sydney and Melbourne and Sydney and Brisbane definitely have to be part of the picture if we expect to recoup the maximum return on that investment.
Okay, so if everything works out, Joe, this Newcastle to Sydney leg would be the first of this national network, and then it would potentially link Brisbane, Canberra and Melbourne, and they're estimating that could happen by 2060.
Yes.
There's no cost on that
right
as yet. But just tell me, how fast would these trains go? Are we going to be moving pretty quickly?
The models that they've selected, or the approach that they've selected, the trains would travel at about 320 kilometers an hour. There are faster trains, but the benefits of that extra 30 kilometers an hour are really what comes into question. So 320 kilometers an hour is fast. Now, it wouldn't always be traveling at that speed, because, of course, on express trains, even in the cases where they're at a long straight line, they have to slow down when they're in tunnels to around 250 kilometers an hour, I believe.
So we wouldn't be seeing like a bullet train that you see in Japan.
Well, that's what they travel at. These are comparable.
Oh, okay.
With the bullet trains in Japan. In Japan, their trains can go up to 350 kilometers an hour, and they have a maglev train that's under construction now, and that goes up to 500 kilometers an hour. But that is a different technology, and that's not what's being proposed here, and probably is a bridge too far for Australia.
Well, Joe, it all sounds pretty good, but I guess people are skeptical given the history of all of this, as we discussed. Do you think that we are just too big a country geographically, and perhaps we just have too small a population to actually make this vision work? It has never worked in the past. Tell me, how is it going to work now?
Well, Australia is a big continent, but most of our population live along the East Coast. The density of the population is really comparable with, for example, Spain's. And Spain has about 4,000 kilometers of high-speed rail and are expanding it. I think it's appropriate that we're looking at this, and I think that it's doable if we have the vision and we have the leadership to demonstrate what this is going to do for the country over the next 50 to 100 years.
Okay, so it's not just an expensive folly. That's what the Grattan Institute found in 2020. It said the money would just be better spent on improving transport.
Yeah, I think that's a short-term vision of where we want to go. Right now, we're seeing what that's done in Sydney in particular, where we've spent $70 billion on the metro system, which is a fantastic investment. Mm. But what that's done is concentrate the population and the infrastructure investment in capital cities. Same thing is happening in Melbourne and Brisbane. The problems of congestion and pollution and housing affordability will not be solved by doing the same thing that we've done up to this point. We need to use the assets that we've got as a country, which is, you know, a beautiful, abundant amount of land where cities can expand into regional areas and new cities can be formed. I think one of the other shortcomings of the Grattan approach is that they've used the traditional means of measuring transport projects, which they look at a 30-year time horizon. Well, we're still using the same track, essentially, or the same alignments for trains that were built over 100 years ago now, but we're not tallying that benefit over time. And it's the same thing with high-speed rail. That network will be there for 100 years or more.
All right. Well, tell me then, Joe, you're an optimist.
Mm-hmm.
When will we begin traveling on these high-speed trains, do you think?
Well, if we're successful in developing a business case that's accepted by government. Construction would start in approximately 2 years, and the first trains would be running between Sydney and Gosford by 2039. So what high-speed rail does is offer another solution, another mode of transport, which is really the only type of improvement that we can make that disperses our population and allows us to take advantage of the huge landmass. Certainly, from my standpoint as an urban planner, this is something that would be desperately needed in the next 50 years as we see the issues that arise from building more in the same place.
Joe Langley is an urban planner who worked on a previous high-speed rail proposal, and he's a member of the Australian High-Speed Rail Association. This episode was produced by Sydney Peed and Sam Dunn. Audio production by Cinnamon Nippard. Our supervising producer is David Cody. I'm Sam Hawley. Thanks for listening.